Hello out there and welcome to Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith and joining me as always is a man who has no strings to pull him down, Mike DiCriscio.
Thanks, Mike.
How you doing today, Mike?
I'm good.
So basically, if you've never listened to an episode of Film Bookcast in the past, essentially what we do, we're going to start off with some film news, then move on into our discussions about various movies and TV shows and whatever we want to discuss. And then we will be moving on into our feature-length review. This week, we are reviewing the newest film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the latest film from director Joss Whedon, Avengers: Age of Ultron. We're going to finally find out how old Ultron is right after this.
Whoa. Deep. God right. Damn it. Oh, I'm so stupid. You bastard.
All right. So let's move on into our film news segment. We only have a couple things to talk about today. First of all, 21 Jump Street is a franchise that I love dearly. A couple years ago, it was not a franchise that I loved dearly, but then they came out with a movie.
And now it's a franchise.
Now it's a franchise that I love dearly.
Yeah. It's all making sense
as I've said. But 21 and 22 Jump Street are both movies I really enjoy. And now Sony is talking about, you know, they've been talking about 23 Jump Street for a while. There's a rumors a while ago that 23 Jump Street was going to be a crossover sequel between the Jump Street movies and the Men in Black movies.
Yeah.
Which, as long as Phil Lord and Chris Miller are on board, I'm all for.
It should be really good.
I think that's an awesome idea. But...
That came out in the Sony leaks, right? That's when that...
Yes, that was like during the Sony leaks, and now Sony has basically said that is kind of the plan, to do a 23 Jump Street slash Men in Black crossover. No word yet if Phil and Chris Miller will be involved. They're super busy guys at the moment.
Yeah.
Right now they are working on the story for The Flash.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
We discussed that in one of the last shows, man.
I don't remember stuff.
as well as executive producing Last Man on Earth, and as far... I'm pretty sure they have a couple other... projects in the fire.
Probably.
They're also co-writing and executive producing the whole Lego movie things going on at WB.
All right.
So there's all that. Plus, Sony is wanting to do a female spinoff of 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
So Jump Street for ladies, I guess. This is a... I mean, I get the idea behind it. It's basic. To me, it seems like Sony is throwing things at the wall and just seeing what stick.
Yeah. Since, as we established in the leaks, they have no idea what they're doing with stuff.
Yes. So the idea, Sony also runs the Ghostbusters franchise.
Right.
And Ghostbusters is also doing a female spinoff, as well as a dude-centric spinoff that's could possibly potentially be happening.
For Ghostbusters? Yeah, we did talk about that.
Yes,
right.
With, like, Channing Tatum and possibly Chris Pratt.
Right.
So here's the thing. I get the idea of a 21 Jump Street female spinoff movie. I don't think you need a shared universe of... of Jump Street movies, but they have a couple good writers coming on board for the female spinoff Jump Street movie, which is Lucia Anello and Paul Downs from Broad City. So I've never seen Broad City, but you've seen a few episodes here.
Yeah, it's the weirdest, like, just bizarre humor thing. I don't know.
Yes, really awesome. I've heard really good things.
So I trust them to write a really funny movie. So.
I've heard, I mean, you've seen the first 21 Jump Street, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Some of the, some people have pointed out that it would be cool if they, like, instead of bringing on new characters, they could just focus on the female cops from that movie.
Right.
One of which was played by Dakota Johnson,
who's now famous.
Who is now a famous person.
Yeah.
So,
that
could
work
it would
out.
Totally work out.
Yeah. I'm down for that.
But in any case, 21 Jump Street, 23 Jump Street, whatever, I'm on board as long as they're funny.
Yeah, I'm down. They've been doing a good job so far, so yeah. I trust them.
Exactly. Moving on into the bigger piece of film news this past week. So there's been a lot of talk about Suicide Squad lately.
Yeah.
The new DC movie going to be directed by David Ayer. I believe it recently started filming. Last episode we talked about a little bit of, you mentioned the cast photo that David Ayer had. But one notable exception to that photo is that Jared Leto is not in that photo.
Really? I don't think I noticed that.
Yes, he is not there because he was undergoing a physical transformation to play his character. One of the biggest villains of all time. Some people may know him as the Joker.
Whoa. Crazy.
So it's a big role. It's probably the biggest wild card role of that entire movie.
Yeah.
The Joker has been in movies before.
He has.
Once played by Jack Nicholson in 1989 Batman. Once played very memorably by Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
that's the thing. Heath Ledger's performance with the Joker is sacred at this point.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone could beat that.
Exactly. So it's like the best thing they could possibly do is go in the complete opposite direction.
Just don't even try.
Yeah. Or, yeah, don't even just do the... Don't have the Joker in the movie.
I mean, like, don't try to replicate his...
Yeah, don't... like, his thing was a much more down... Like, in keeping with Nolan's Batman universe, that was a much more realistic kind of take on the
version
Joker.
Version of what that would be.
Or as realistic as it could possibly be, being a crazy clown. Yeah. But they recently released a photo of Jared Leto as the Joker, and it looks very silly.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't think they did a good job.
I mean, we should preface this by saying it's just one photo of a movie that's not coming out in over a year.
Yeah, so, I mean, they could totally change this by the time the movie comes out, which I hope they do.
And the actual it doesn't tell you anything about the performance itself, which could be great.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a good actor. Like, I think he could be really cool. Fair enough.
But yeah, so basically this Joker photo, it looks like a cartoon is what it looks like, honestly. Yeah. Which I dig that kind of idea where it just go completely balls out with it.
Yeah.
But I think the problem with it is it looks like... I don't know. The interpretation of the Joker as in this photo looks like every like insufferable douchebag I went to high school with.
Yeah, like I think you retweeted it or somebody was like, "I'm glad this Joker's origin story involves falling into a vat of Hot Topic."
Yes,
yeah. That's exactly what he looks like.
Yeah, he looks like he's covered in tattoos, which
is fine, I guess.
Yeah, like I guess it's weird to think about the Joker like going to like a tattoo parlor and being like, yeah. I would like the word "ha"
just all
etched over my entire left shoulder.
Yes, because I like jokes
several times. Yes, and I'd like a giant smiley face on my right shoulder, and I'd like the word "damage" in cursive on my forehead.
Yeah,
because.
I'm messed up and everybody's got to know it.
Exactly. It's
like, what?
It's like, what? It's just making the subtext text. Like, you know the Joker is damaged.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with... somebody, I think, on Reddit was like, the idea of, besides the fact of him going to tattoos, because I think it's supposed to be like he's in prison, right? Like he's in the movie.
I think so. I really don't know.
So, like, it's possible he got, like, prison tattoos or whatever, which is fine. But, the aftercare of tattoos is even more funny of, the like, thinking of the Joker having to, like, apply lotion every 12 hours and, like, taking care of his tattoos. It's like, yep. And what's up with the teeth? Like, he's got a Jaws thing going.
Yeah, he's got, like, grills.
Yeah,
right?
His teeth are, like, all metal.
It's so much, there's so much going on with that.
Yeah.
You know, it could be much simpler.
It could. It could.
But, again, it doesn't really tell you anything about Jared Leto's performance.
No.
It
just, this is just purely appearance.
It just looks very silly to me. I don't know. Like, I've been wondering about how Jared Leto's going to play it, because I don't think he can do Heath Ledger.
No.
I think, based on this appearance of the Joker, I feel like the closest analog to this, I think Jared Leto's going to try to imitate Mark Hamill. That's
okay. I mean, that kind of fits, I think.
Yeah, like I think that his character looks like a cartoon.
And yeah, looks, just go with a cartoony version.
Yeah. So I don't really know how that fits into the overall DC kind of thing, which has been very grimdark and, you know, very like...
It's going to be the last name of my next D&D character.
Grimdark.
But yeah, I don't know if this is going to be like a over the top, like not goofy, but like cartoon. Yeah, cartoonish is the appropriate word versus like the trailer for Batman vs. Superman is very gritty, like.
Yeah, it's like I recently just saw the trailer of Batman vs. Superman. Again, yeah. I as I said in the last episode, I'm not really watching trailers that much anymore. Mm-hmm. But I happened to see the trailer of Batman vs. Superman when we saw our feature film, The Avengers.
Yep.
And it looks very serious. It looks very like, you know.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see how Suicide Squad fits into that.
Yeah. I think the best possible way to do it, I think Suicide Squad can be a serious movie,
mm-hmm.
and just have the Joker be that crazy off-the-wall character by himself with Harley Quinn, I guess.
Yeah.
And
that would actually be kind of awesome.
Like, that would be probably the way to do it. You can have that contrast
if
there.
He just doesn't fit the rest of the movie.
Yeah, like, he could just be bouncing around doing whatever he does, doing Joker things.
Fair enough. Joker's gonna joke.
Joker's gonna joke. Yes. All right. So that's, I think, wraps up our film news segment.
Yeah.
So let's move on into our... discussions. So, Mike, why don't you start? You have something you wish to talk about.
I do. So for my discussions, I'm going to talk about Danger 5, which is a Australian TV show created by David Ashby and Dario Russo. The first series, it's only got two series so far. I think they're seven episodes each or something like that. Pretty short, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
It's first season or series premiered in February 2012. And I didn't realize that because there's a GIF. There's one scene in I forget what episode two maybe, where it's a dude and he's reading a magazine called Sensible Chuckle. And he's just like, ooh, so good. And there's a GIF of that that's been around on the internet forever. And I was like, what? Like, I didn't know that's from this show. I don't know. But it is a spoof of, like, 1960s international spy movies, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
So it's – I didn't realize it, too. It's actually set in the 60s. So in this universe, the World War II has gone on into the 60s, I guess. Because they're trying – their whole mission is to kill Hitler. Right. And they just fail miserably at it every time. And it's got a lot of just, like, bizarre running gags. Like, every time they try to kill Hitler, he jumps through a window to escape, even when they're in, like, an underwater world.
Yeah.
Like, they're in Atlantis, and he jumps through a window to escape. And it's the same shot of him jumping through a window every time. it's awesome. And, like, it's just, like, a really good spoof of 60s things, like B-movies, because, like, the audio dub is off. Mm. By like a quarter of a second. Like, and the weirdest part is their guy that gives them their missions, like they tells them what to do for every episode, is a giant bald eagle in a suit. So it's just a dude with a bald eagle head on talking, and like the bald eagle head just opens and closes as the like audio comes out of it. Like they don't try to make it pretend like it's talking at all. I don't know, it's really awesome. So it's on Netflix, season two just went up, I think, in like February,
okay,
or March or something like that. Because it said on, according to the Wikipedia, it premiered in January of 2015. So it was
okay. So this is a relatively recent show.
Yeah, for season two. Season one was in 2012.
Okay, so it's been a few years.
Yeah, it took him a couple of years to make season two, apparently. And that one, I haven't watched that one yet. I only watched the first one. Apparently, series two is set in the mid 80s.
Okay.
So I'm excited to see what that's about. Hopefully, it's about like the Russians or something. Making fun of the Cold War.
Fair enough. Yeah, that sounds amazing. That sounds like right up my alley.
Yeah, I mean, you would like it's if you like weird stuff that doesn't really make sense half the time. Like they fight Nazi dinosaurs on Antarctica.
I am in
on Antarctica, which is a jungle. It doesn't make any sense, and it's awesome.
All right, that is Danger 5. It's available on Netflix, and we will move on into my discussion. So my discussion, it's not some obscure Australian TV show.
Should be.
You are right, sir. But I recently was at Best Buy the past couple of days, throwing in the Best Buy promotion. Maybe they'll give us something.
This episode brought to you by Best Buy.
I was at Best Buy a couple of days ago, and they had a pretty good sale on some Blu-rays, and I picked up two.
Well, which ones were those?
I picked up Superman the Movie and Superman 2, the Richard Donner Cut.
Whoa.
So I haven't seen either of these movies in a long time, so it was fun to rewatch them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first time watching Superman 2, the Richard Donner Cut.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that version.
Okay, so I'm going to explain what that is.
Okay.
But first, I'll just say both these movies are awesome. I'm a big fan of Superman in his most purest form. Which to me is Superman, Superman 2, and Superman Returns.
Fair enough.
You know, I think Man of Steel has some interesting stuff about it, but for me, it's Superman is the light, the guy who's trying to be a hero, somebody who's a superhero,
right?
Instead of Man of Steel, where it's just like some asshole destroying a city,
basically.
But in any case, Superman the movie is pretty much great all the way through. The ending's a little weird, but you know, whatever. It's the one where Superman travels back in time. He like flies around the Earth really fast and rotates it backwards.
Goes backwards,
so that makes time go backwards. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
It's the rules, man.
But it works by like the logic of nonsense,
which by comic book standards,
like it works in the context of the movie. I think it's fine. But Superman 2, the Richard Donner Cut's a really interesting movie. Because so Richard Donner was the director of Superman the Movie, and he was directing Superman 2, but he got fired about halfway through filming for clashing with the studio. And so the movie that ended up being released to theaters is credited as being directed by Richard Lester, who the studio hired to take over. And Richard Lester was the director of films like Help and A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles movies.
Okay.
He was a more comedic director. Mm-hmm. And how long has it been since you've seen Superman 2?
Long enough that I don't really know what happens.
Okay. Well, if you watch the original cut of Superman 2.
Is that the one with the Fortress of Solitude?
They both have the Fortress of Solitude. Okay. But the end of Superman 2 takes place in the Fortress of Solitude.
Okay.
It's with General Zod.
Yep, okay. That's the one.
Superman 2 is a movie that's very all over the place, tonally.
Okay.
So I generally like the original cut of Superman 2. I think it's fine. But the Richard Donner cut takes all the footage that Richard Donner shot, adds, and kind of conforms to what his vision of the movie would be. So it takes a lot of it cuts out a lot of Richard Lester's footage. It brings in more deleted scenes. Even at one point, instead of they never got around to shooting one particular scene, so they take a screen test from Christopher Reeve and Margot Kidder and throw it in there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, but it creates a more complete version of Superman 2. It feels it's much better.
Really?
Actually,
even with it not being like shot and just using screen tests.
Yeah. I mean, that's only like in one scene, okay. But with Richard Lester's version of Superman 2. His scenes tended to have a lot more like slapstick stuff.
Right.
And he's actually, so there's elements of Superman 2 that people remember, but, are terrible. So, do you remember the like cellophane S that Superman like froze?
No.
Okay. In the original cut of Superman 2 during the final fight of the Fortress of Solitude, Superman like takes the S off of his shirt, but it's like a hologram thing and he just throws it at Zod and like wraps him in the S.
Okay.
That is not in the Richard Donner cut.
Interesting.
Also, at the end of Superman 2, in the original version, Superman uses some kind of amnesia kiss with Lois to make her forget that he is Superman.
Right.
That is not in the Richard Donner cut. They actually just redo the going back in time.
Wow.
And in the original cut of Superman 2, there's like a scene where Zod and his cronies are using like wind breath, like super breath, to like destroy the city.
Okay.
But when that's happening in the original cut, like you just see a lot of slapstick stuff happen.
So like, people falling over,
like a kid's ice cream cone falls off, and like a guy's hat falls off his head.
Jesus,
that's cut. Like it's a much more, and the thing is, it's still a really funny movie,
right?
Because these are like
still goofy.
Yeah, these are still goofy movies, but they're not like overdone. I guess it's I think Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, is a much superior version to Superman 2, and I'm glad I got the Blu-ray.
Now you own it.
Now I own it forever.
Good job.
But in any case, that's what I wanted to talk about. I did also want to briefly mention, I saw a video online, came out like a week ago, called What If Man of Steel Was in Color?
Right.
And basically what they did is, so Man of Steel is a very desaturated movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks very like grim and dark and grimdark. And
patent pending.
Yeah. And basically this person, they kind of created this video essay about, you know, what if Man of Steel was in color, and they just like resaturate the movie and, you know, have it be bright. And it's
like a superhero.
Movie. The skies are suddenly blue and Superman's costume is blue and red.
Yeah.
And it looks a lot better.
They should have done that.
Yeah. It looks more inspiring and more like a real Superman movie.
Yeah. I don't know. Man of Steel is a waste. I wouldn't go that far, actually. But, yeah, the version of it in color is way more awesome.
Yeah. But
I wish that had happened.
In any case, that's really what I want to talk about. So, Mike, are you ready to move on?
Yes. I need to know how old Ultron is.
Yes. All right, guys. We're going to move on into our review for Avengers Age of Ultron.
If I lift it, do I get to rule Asgard?
Yes, of course.
I will be fair but firmly cruel. Be right back.
Am I even pulling?
Are you on my team?
Just represent, pull.
All right, let's go.
Come on, Cap.
Nothing.
Oh, no, that's not a question I need answered.
The handle's imprinted. Whosoever is carrying Thor's fingerprints is, I think, the literal translation.
Yes, well, that's a very interesting theory. I have a simpler one. You're all not worthy.
How could you be worthy? You're all puppets. Tangled in strings.
Thank you.
right, guys, that was from the trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron. It's the newest film from writer-director Joss Whedon. It is the 11th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it stars Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, Mark Ruffalo, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner, James Spader, Elizabeth Olsen, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Paul Bettany, and a host of others. So many people, guys.
There's a lot of humans.
There's so many humans in this movie. So, Mike, before we get into Avengers Age of Ultron,
yes,
let's talk about our kind of overall take on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, Mike, why don't you start? Just go, man.
I want more of it. I thought I was going to feel a little burnt out going in. I had read some stuff. I know this is the divisive movie, you know. Some critics and people are not enjoying it as much as the previous Marvel movies.
Sure.
So I was a little nervous, and I thought maybe I'll have a little Marvel exhaustion. I was wrong. This is this is an awesome movie, and I am now much more excited for the rest of the movies.
Fair enough. Yeah. So basically, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think, has been a pretty amazing cinematic experiment.
It's working. Whatever they're doing is working.
Yeah, it's basically just it's such a simple idea. Just take the comics and make them movies.
And link them
like they do comics. But kind of, I think what makes this universe work is that the movies themselves work by themselves.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So like...
Absolutely.
In Avengers Age of Ultron, for example, there is information in the other movies that you may need to know in order to get basic plot details. Like, for example, the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Winter Soldier.
Right.
But the movie doesn't hinge itself on that.
No.
Like, you can kind of just walk into Age of Ultron, I wouldn't say feeling fresh, because there's a lot of characters and stuff from various movies that you'll be like, who's this? Like, why is this?
What's going on?
Why is this guy here? But you'd be able to understand everything, I think, which is
absolutely
kind of the important thing. So the Marvel Cinematic Universe is something that I've really enjoyed and loved over the course of the last 7 years that it's been around. It's been that long already.
Wow.
Back in the early days, back when Iron Man came out and everybody was just excited that Nick Fury was in the cameo.
At the end, I was like, oh, well, that's so crazy. No way.
Yeah. And then, like, fast forward 5 years and an Avengers movie came out and people were like, whoa, this actually happened?
Was The Incredible Hulk the second one?
Yes. The one with Edward Norton?
Yes, because I remember at the end of that when Nick Fury is at the, I think.
No, Robert Downey Jr. shows up. Tony Stark shows up at the end of The Incredible Hulk, yeah.
Oh, you're right, yeah. It's like, oh my god, the Hulk and Iron Man are together. That's crazy, no way. Cool, two movies are linked, no way.
Yeah.
the rest is history.
Yeah, speaking of Iron Man, actually, just kind of briefly, I noticed that in the credits of Age of Ultron, Jon Favreau is still credited as an executive producer.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Which is like, cool, good for him.
I'm glad he stayed on board. That's cool.
Yeah, like he has basically no involvement with these movies anymore.
I guess he's just throwing him money. That's all you do as an executive producer, basically.
I guess.
Or so I'm told.
Yeah, I think it's just the title. Because he started it. Yeah, he directed the first Iron Man.
Yeah.
But in any case, yes, so I'm a big fan of the Marvel Universe up to this point. Mm-hmm. I would say my favorite of them before Age of Ultron is probably Winter Soldier, but possibly the first Avengers.
Not Guardians?
Guardians is great, too.
It has such a different feel.
Yeah, it is a very sort of a different feel, yeah. And I do really like Guardians, but I think Winter Soldier up to this point is probably the one that really worked the best for me.
Yeah.
I'm also a big fan of... huge Joss Whedon fan, so I'm going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
But the Avengers is awesome. First Avengers.
Yeah.
Like it's, and I'm going to stop calling it the First Avengers because there's already a movie called The First Avenger.
True.
But the original Avengers, really felt like the culmination of a lot of things at the time anyway. And it has allowed Marvel to kind of just do what they want now.
Floodgates are open.
Yeah. And now we're coming out with Guardians of the Galaxy movies. We're coming out with Ant-Man movies, Doctor Strange.
Dude, the Ant-Man trailer is so good.
Yes.
That looks awesome.
Yeah. I'm actually, I was worried about Ant-Man because I grew right left, but right. I think that trailer kind of sold me. I'm interested again. All that said, the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
And then my Joss Whedon fandom.
Yeah, on top of that.
I'm a huge fan of Joss Whedon, who has directed the first Avengers. He also directed Serenity, Dr. Horrible's Sing Along Blog, and created TV shows such as Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, Firefly, and Dollhouse, all of which are awesome.
Amazing.
So, I'm a big fan of his work and his writing style. And so you take all that. You take the Marvel Universe that I have enjoyed so very much.
Yep.
And the work of Joss Whedon, who is one of the best writer-directors working around today, I think.
I would agree.
Take all that together.
Yep.
And you make Avengers Age of Ultron. Which I think is probably the best Marvel Universe movie so far, released so far.
I think I would agree with that.
Would you?
Yeah. It's either, it's a toss-up for me between that and Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier's awesome, too. And, I think this one is probably the best one.
Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. End of review.
We'll see. Thanks for listening, everybody.
See you guys next week when we're reviewing Mad Max Fury Road.
This is what the whole review is going to be. just us like, yeah, I really liked it a lot. Oh, you did too? Okay, cool.
But, I think Joss Whedon brings so much to these movies.
This is the most Whedon-y of the Whedon things.
Yes.
And it's awesome.
Yeah. Here's the thing. When the original Avengers came out, one of the things I liked about it a lot was that you can feel like Joss Whedon's there.
Yeah.
But, I watched it the night before I watched The Age of Ultron.
Oh, really?
I did. As a refresher.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And I really like that movie still, but I think it does, it suffers a little bit just the way it kind of builds up.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, the movie isn't really about anything.
Yeah.
The arc of that movie is that the team, it's just the team getting together to fight Loki.
It's the Blues Brothers, basically. They're getting the band together.
Yeah. This movie, every character has their own specific arc.
Yeah.
Which I think, and it works a lot better, I think. And it hits on a more emotional level than I think the first Avengers ever does. One of the things that Joss Whedon has said before this movie came out was that he wants to go smaller instead of bigger. I think this movie does go bigger, but it also...
But it has a lot of small moments.
I feel like it's the most intimate of the Marvel movies.
Definitely.
There are long stretches where, like, nobody's fighting and they're just kind of hanging out. There's an early party scene that goes on for about 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Which, as it was ending, I kind of was like, man, I wish this was the whole movie.
just keep going. No, don't stop.
Like, it was so much fun to just see them, like, hang out and, like, just chill with each other.
Yeah.
But Whedon brings so much to these movies, and he's basically burnt out now.
That's it. Like, he's done.
Yeah. Well, he almost didn't come back for this movie.
Wow.
Like, he was so, like, tired after the first Avengers came out. But then Marvel drove a dump truck of money over to his house.
Yeah.
And so he's like, all right,
I'll do Age of Ultron. And he could Scrooge McDuck into it. So.
Yeah. but now he's officially done. He's officially done with Marvel movies because the Russos are directing Infinity War. That's very disappointing. I'm a little terrified for the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a post-Whedon world.
Yeah.
But the Russos are great. Like, yeah, they did Winter Soldier. Awesome. I'm sure that'll be great. But
I need the Whedon quips.
Exactly. That's the thing. Nobody quips like Joss Whedon.
Nobody.
You know. And in any case, so let's talk about the plot of Avengers: Age of Ultron. We're just kind of turning this into a Whedon love fest.
Yeah. Did you expect it to be anything else?
It's fair. So Avengers: Age of Ultron. Details Tony Stark and Bruce Banner as they create an AI artificial intelligence, for those not in the know.
For those who haven't read a book since 1960, apparently.
They create AI that basically is intended to protect the entire Earth. Mm-hmm. But once the AI is created, it basically just decides, well, to protect the Earth, everyone must die.
Yeah.
So, and that is Ultron. And basically, it's the Avengers fighting Ultron the entire movie.
Yep.
And in that time, first you meet Ultron, who is the coolest.
James Spader is amazing.
Yeah. That's probably the snarkiest Marvel villain.
Even he's the Whedon-iest of the Whedon villains. Like,
yeah. Here's the thing. Like, Marvel has had a lot of trouble with their villains, I think, in their movies in the past. The only one that's really made it that much of an impression to me is Loki. And maybe Robert Redford in Winter Soldier. And that's less of him, his character, and more just the fact that he's Robert Redford.
That is Robert Redford, and he said Hail Hydra.
Yeah. But Ultron, like, makes an impression right away, and he's, like, super funny and super memorable.
Yeah, it's weird.
There's so many great one-liners in this movie, and a lot of them are from Ultron.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if James Spader was there, like mocapped, or did he?
I believe he did the mocap. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he gives some life to those red robot eyes.
Yeah, he does. He does.
And yeah, and I mean, I think it's just he just looks awesome. Like, it's an incredible visual creation.
Yeah.
Which also brings me to another incredible visual creation of this movie, which is Vision.
Oh my god.
We're gonna talk about Vision in a little bit in spoilers.
It's like, maybe we should save that for spoilers.
Well, people know that Vision's in the movie.
Oh, it's yeah, not, he's in a trailer. You're right.
I will say that for spoilers, but I will say that the Vision looks amazing.
Yes, I'm so glad that they did not CGI him.
Yeah, that's the thing. Vision could have easily been like the CGI creation.
Yeah.
And instead, it's Paul Bettany.
All up in his makeup.
Just in makeup and like spandex and like probably took like 8 hours to put together.
Yeah. And it's awesome.
And it's great.
Totally paid off.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah.
It looks so good. And yeah, so everybody in this movie gets their kind of moment to shine. Mm-hmm. I think Whedon is at his best when he's working with an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's this movie feels like it's the classic Joss Whedon group of misfits.
That it really does.
Just getting together to fight crime.
Especially in this one.
It felt like that in the first one, but this one really feels like one of Whedon's big things is that his groups are always fighting with each other. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of infighting in his groups, and this one dials that up to an insane degree, much more than the first Avengers. But this feels like, you know, like the Avengers can take their place alongside the Scooby Gang and the team of Angels Investigations and the crew of the Serenity.
Yep.
You know, it's really good. I'm just going to keep saying this over and over again. It's a really good movie.
I want you to understand this, everybody.
I think, one of the things I found really interesting about this is that this movie is not getting the acclaim that the first Avengers got.
Yeah.
So I was actually looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score, and this movie is in like the 70s.
Really?
Whereas Avengers 1 is in like the 90s.
Yeah.
And I was like trying to figure out why that is. So I think this is a much superior movie to that one.
Absolutely.
There's so much more going on and so much more like interesting ideas going on with, mm-hmm. in terms of like the Stark's attitude with the AI.
Yeah.
His ideological clashes between Stark and Captain America.
Right. My friend called it the Age of Setup.
The Age of Setup. And that's true. That is like a legitimate complaint that people have had, is that a lot of this movie is setting up other movies.
Yeah.
But
it's still really good.
Yeah. I think, here's the thing. I think it's not like Iron Man 2, where Iron Man 2 felt like it was just set up for a bunch of other movies.
Yeah.
This feels like it is set up for, this doesn't feel like it's set up for other movies to me.
No.
It felt like the natural conclusion to the story that's being told here,
mm-hmm.
is where the end in this movie, and if that happens to set up another movie,
then fine,
then so be it.
Yeah, it didn't feel like it was forcing other movies.
Exactly.
So
and one of the things Devin Faraci from BadassDigest.com who was tweeting about the movie a while ago, mm-hmm. like he saw it a few weeks ago, and he compared the Avengers 1 and 2 to Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
And the reason for that is as I totally agree with, Star Wars is the one. The original Star Wars is the one with all the crowd-pleasing moments,
right.
The one that everybody gets like jazzed for. It's super fun and stuff.
Right.
And Empire Strikes Back, people kind of forget. Empire Strikes Back was kind of divisive upon release. Like, that's the movie. Like half people were like, I don't like this as much as Star Wars.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And the reason for that is because Empire Strikes Back really tries to go for like more intimate kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
sets up Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. The climax, let's put it this way. The climax of Star Wars is a team of rebels, mm-hmm. destroying a giant Death Star.
Right.
And the climax of Empire Strikes Back is a one-on-one fight between Luke and Darth Vader.
Ooh.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it goes for a character climax over a plot climax.
Right.
And I think Age of Ultron does the same thing. Although the climax of Age of Ultron is
a 45-minute battle.
Yeah. But it's much more focused on character than it is on plot, which,
yes.
I think is what that's saying. But it's in many ways similar to Empire Strikes Back. It goes for like that smaller, kind of more intimate stuff.
Yeah.
Which some people might not get as much as they did with the first Avengers.
First one, yeah.
That, like, some people might not be getting what they're looking for with this,
right.
movie, is what I'm saying.
Right. Their expectations are not being met.
Exactly. One of the things I liked about this movie, it seems like the Marvel Universe is at a point where characters can come and go as needed.
Yes, and it's awesome.
Yes. Like, it's super cool to just see, like, a character from another movie just kind of pop in for a few seconds and, like,
you know. At the party scene.
Yeah, like, at the party scene, you have a couple of...
Anthony Mackie, I don't remember his character's name.
Falcon.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
As Falcon, just there.
Yeah, he's chilling at the party.
Yeah.
Don Cheadle, War Machine.
War Machine's there.
You know, Nick Fury pops in for like a few minutes. It's one of those things where you can just kind of like this universe is so big and so expansive now. You can kind of just have people like coming in and out.
Just hanging out, yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
No way. Yeah, this is really awesome. I'm glad that this is happening.
Yeah,
with movies.
Yes, it feels to me, Age of Ultron feels like the culmination of everything the Marvel Universe has tried to achieve up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it also feels like, you know, the perfect kind of entryway for the next wave of movies.
Next phase.
Yeah, phase three.
Who do we have coming up? What movies?
Well, Ant-Man is technically phase two, supposedly.
Even though it comes out after Avengers.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I really, like, I mean,
always kind of assumed the Avengers would be the end points of the phases.
I think everybody kind of did. Like, Ant-Man was supposed to be phase three, but it's whatever.
Whatever.
Like, the phases are like, just a term.
Yeah. It's a marketing
thing. I mean, Ant-Man, I think, is going to be mostly standalone anyway. Like, it's going to be mostly set aside.
I'm sure they'll have a post-credits thing where, like, Nick Fury will show up or some shit. Not that it'll be bad. It'll just be how they link it.
Yeah. But so there's Ant-Man after this in July. And then next year you have Captain America Civil War and Doctor Strange. And then after that you have Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Spider-Man, and Thor Ragnarok. And then after that you have Avengers Infinity War Part 1. And then Black Panther, Captain Marvel. And then Infinity War Part 2 and then Inhumans. So they've got movies mapped out to 2019.
Good God.
Plus, you know, the various TV shows that are in development right now.
Yes.
Right now, there's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They might bring back Agent Carter for a second season.
Mm-hmm.
And Daredevil just premiered on Netflix.
Yes, oh my God.
Which I haven't watched the rest of yet, but I know you're a big fan.
You talked about it last episode, I think, right?
Yeah.
So I took your recommendation, and I watched it. And I watched the first episode and was like, yeah, it's pretty good, okay. And then I watched episode two, which has the five-minute take.
I heard about
fight
that,
scene.
Yeah.
Was like, this is awesome. Watched the third one and was like, this is what I'm doing with my day. And I watched 9 episodes in one day. And it, like, there's the incident. They talk about the incident in the first episode.
Right. They refer to the Battle of New York. Yeah.
But then there's another line later in the season where, you know, Daredevil's giving the thugs trouble. And their boss is like, oh, you're getting beat up by a guy in a mask. If he had an iron suit or a magic hammer, I'd understand. And it's like, oh, yes, he's got to show up now in the Avengers movies. Like, he has to be there.
Yeah, it's the, like, and there's Daredevil and there's a bunch of other Netflix shows coming out, like Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist.
Yeah.
So, yeah, potentially Infinity War Part 2 could just be the Avengers, the Defenders, the Guardians of the Galaxy. I think I actually mentioned this last
probably,
podcast,
yeah.
too. But yeah, it could be a whole crazy lineup.
That would be insane.
And in any case, there's a lot of things that we want to talk about in spoilers, I think.
Yep.
You know? So I think we should do that.
Let's do it.
But actually, before we do,
ooh.
Who's your MVP for the movie? Like, who do you think is, like, the character for the movie?
The character? I don't know. I almost want to say either, like, Vision or Scarlet Witch.
Yeah, they're all, like
they're really important.
They're great additions to the team. Yeah.
Yes, they're awesome.
They're awesome, and we will talk about Vision more and Scarlet Witch more.
Yeah,
but Scarlet Witch is great. For me, it's Hawkeye. I really love Hawkeye in this movie.
He is really awesome.
Didn't even expect to do that.
He's, yeah,
because that's the thing, Hawkeye. I think what this movie does is so it expands upon a lot of the backstory and like the character motivations for Hulk, Black Widow, and Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the characters in the team that don't really get their own movies, except for Hulk,
except for
that
Hulk.
One time. That Marvel seems
that
like they're really...
That doesn't count, though.
Marvel seems like they're really trying to forget about that Hulk
they
movie.
They are, real hard.
But, so, I think... and Hawkeye, I think, has some of the best lines in this movie.
He's very self-aware, first off.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, for a character... Like, Black Widow, we've really seen, like, in a bunch of different movies. And Hulk had his own movie and, you know, was a major character in the first Avengers.
Right.
But Hawkeye had a 30-second cameo in Thor.
Right.
And then spent most of the Avengers under Loki's spell.
That's right.
So we actually didn't know that much about
Hawkeye. We don't know anything about him.
And so Age of Ultron really expands upon that character a lot in really interesting and fun ways.
And makes him really good.
Yeah. Like, he's so cool.
Yeah.
But,
and, like, I care about him now.
Yeah.
Other than he was just the dude with the bow.
Exactly.
Now he's like a dude with the bow and some other stuff.
Yes. All right. But I think that about wraps up our pre-spoilers review.
Sure.
So now let's move on into spoilers for Avengers Age of Ultron.
Ouch.
So, Mike, yesterday I watched a new piece of media written and directed by Joss Whedon, where characters experience visions of their past while challenging an evil force hell-bent on taking them down. But enough about objects in space, the final episode of Firefly.
Wow. What a deep cut.
Let's talk about Avengers, Age of Ultron, man.
Okay. Let's do that.
So, as I mentioned in that terrible joke, one of the things that happens in this movie is, so Scarlet Witch is a character in this movie, as well as Quicksilver,
correct,
who we haven't mentioned yet. Scarlet Witch is played by Elizabeth Olsen, and one of the things she does throughout, in about halfway through the movie, is she makes some of the Avengers experience, like, visions of their past.
Right.
Or future.
Whoa! X-Men Days of Future Past.
Whoa! So she basically directly affects Black Widow, Captain America, Thor, and the Hulk.
Does she give the Hulk a thing? We don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we don't see
his
vision.
We don't see it, yeah.
We don't see his vision, but she makes him, like, go crazy, go nuts.
That's true, you're right.
So maybe not experience a vision or whatever, but she doesn't.
Does the Hulk even have a mind? We don't know.
Yes, we do. Shh. We're what, like, he can. He
I'm kidding.
He was consciously driving that ship at the end of the movie.
Was he? Was he driving it or just being Big Hulk in Little Plane? I think he was just being Big Hulk in Little Plane.
But in any case, so there's, yeah, these visions that Scarlet Witch conjures up,
yeah,
for the various Avengers. You see Black Widow in her, like, training when she was a little girl.
Yeah, which was awesome to know her backstory.
Yeah, a little bit. That's actually something that got in a little bit more detail in Agent Carter. You see some of the Black Widow training program,
cool,
which is pretty cool. But in any case, you also see Captain America at, like, a World War II dance, meeting up with Agent Carter herself, mm-hmm, Haley Atwell. And you see Thor's vision, which involves Heimdall from Asgard.
My main man.
Idris Elba. Just being like, things are happening.
Yeah, my eyes are wide.
Which, to me, felt like probably set up for Thor Ragnarok.
Right, yeah.
In any case, these, I really enjoyed these. I thought the one of the things that this contributes to, and I think I didn't mention this before, but Age of Ultron is the most visually dynamic of the Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more going on here than, like, the Avengers. The first Avengers is a fairly, like, static movie from a directing point of view. And I think Joss Whedon's a strong director, but I think he's a better writer than his director. But I think he's a strong director, too, especially when he's kind of just able to do his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like for Avengers, he might have been, like, reined in a little bit. But for this one, they kind of just let him do whatever he wanted.
Go do what you want.
So, I mean, there's these, like, Scarlet Witch visions where it's, like, these sort of David Lynchian kind of...
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
David Lynchian kind of things. I didn't mean to steal your thunder there, Mike.
No, it's okay. Well, the one that made me think of it was Captain America's, because he's at, a ball.
Right.
And he's dancing, and he, like, turns around, and whoosh, everyone's gone.
Yeah.
And he's just in an empty ballroom, and I was like, David Lynch. I don't know, that was cool.
Yeah, there's also, there's scenes, the early scene between Jarvis and Ultron is just different.
It's like
just
packets of information.
Yeah, and just, like, you just see, like, these two kind of beings, like...
It's consciousness.
Yeah, it's consciousness. They don't actually, like, exist yet. They're just, like, inside a computer. And you just see, like, these, like, zooming around and, like, just going through all the different, like,
reading all the news information and stuff.
Yeah. So I really like that. I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so this is, like, easily the most visually compelling of the Avengers movies, mm-hmm, of the Marvel movies, I mean. And, there's a lot of things in this movie that happen that you kind of come out of nowhere.
Yep.
But I think if you can just go with them, you'll be pleased with where they take you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Specifically, I'm thinking of two things. First off, the romance between Hulk and Black Widow.
Right.
Which has never been mentioned before at all, but I really enjoyed
it. Yeah. I guess it's like a tiny little itty-bitty bit hinted at in the first Avengers when she, like, goes to get Bruce Banner. And she kind of has, like, a little swoon look to her, I think.
Right, but you can easily just be like, she was just trying to get him there.
Right.
Trying to get him,
which is fine,
on board.
Yeah.
I think it continues a pattern of Joss Whedon tropes where a strong woman will fall for a guy who turns into a literal monster.
Oh my god.
Specifically, I'm thinking of Buffy and Angel, Buffy and Spike,
yep,
and Willow and Oz.
Wow.
So there's that.
Yeah, you're right. That is true. Make the subtext text. But yeah, I don't know. I find it weird. I don't know. Like, not that, not the relationship, but just like Banner's like constant need to like, I gotta run away from everything.
Well, he's a danger to yeah. everyone. Which,
that's true.
That's actually
that scene was awesome with Thor in the very beginning after the first battle. He's like, the gates of hell are filled with the victims of the Hulk. She's like, no. He's like, they're complaining about pulled muscles. It's awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of great lines in this movie. And yeah. Thor is Thor. I think Thor is like a perfect Joss Whedon character.
He
like,
is.
He's just like Joss Whedon mostly has him off to the side. There's actually literally a part of the movie where Thor just leaves.
Yeah, that's a good
and
point.
Does his own thing.
Yeah.
For a little while.
Yeah.
But I really liked the way like the Hulk and Black Widow relationship kind of paid off towards the end. Like
mm-hmm.
they kind of built it up. She kisses him and then pushes him off the building to turn back into the Hulk.
Right, that's true. Wait, what about that line? That was like Star Wars Episode One level bad.
Wait, which line? What are you talking about?
I adore you, and then, like, really? And then kisses him and pushes him off the building. I don't know. I thought it was really lame.
Oh, it was fine. I had no problem.
You're breaking my heart.
I had no problem with it. But
fine. Fine, Mike.
But I think that relationship kind of. Ends in a really interesting place because it's the Hulk, like, just leaves.
Being Big Hulk and Little Plane.
Big Hulk and Little Plane. But, like, Black Widow's about to, like, lead him back to the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier.
Yeah.
And the Hulk turns her off and just goes off and, like, yeah, it's in the stealth jet so they can't track him. And I think that's really, like, this movie ends in a place where the Avengers are completely divided.
Wonder why.
But yeah, so let's talk about where they're all at the end of the movie. Hulk has disappeared. Nobody knows where. Thor is back in Asgard. Hawkeye is with his secret family, who we'll get to in a second.
Spoiler alert.
Well, we're in spoilers, I know. So it's okay. But Hawkeye's with his secret family, and Iron Man leaves because he's like...
Because he's Iron Man.
Well, I think he feels guilty
about...
Gets
a super fancy car, just like, takes off.
Well, I think he also feels guilty about creating something that almost destroyed the entire world.
That's true. You're probably right.
So he's like, I can't be an Avenger anymore.
Yeah.
So all that's left is Captain America and Black Widow. And then at the end of the movie, new Avengers lineup.
Yeah.
Of War Machine, Falcon.
And Vision.
Vision and Scarlet Witch.
Oh, yeah, and Scarlet Witch. Yeah.
Scarlet Witch was there. And actually, the last line of this movie is...
Oh, my God.
Classic Joss Whedon.
It is. It's amazing.
Where Captain America just shouts, Avengers? And he's about to say assemble.
Takes a deep breath.
He's about to say assemble, and then it cuts to credits and says, written and directed by Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
You're like, gah!
You son of a bitch.
He's a master at trolling the audience.
He knows exactly what we want, because he also wants it. And he can deny us that.
Yes. But yes, so I think that's a really cool, I like that they introduced the new Avengers lineup. I'm sure we'll see more of them in the very near future, probably.
Yeah.
I know it's actually already confirmed that, I mean, Falcon's gonna be in Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlet Witch is confirmed to be in Civil War.
I would assume everybody is, right? Isn't that, like, the kind of the point?
I mean, I think, I don't think Thor is.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
That's, like, it's, I know Hawkeye's in it, and Iron Man's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's basically going to be like Avengers 2.5, I think, is
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, all right, we're halfway through.
Yeah.
About in the middle between Avengers 2 and Avengers 3.
I do think that's interesting that they decided to make Civil War a Captain America movie, not...
Not an Avengers movie,
Not an Avengers movie, yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's cool. I think people are overblowing how much of an adaptation of Civil War it's going to be. I feel like it's not going to be as straight of an adaptation as people think it will be. Because, like, this was... Age of Ultron is the title of the comic book as well. And this was barely based on the comic. So.
All right. Fair enough, knowing that information.
Yeah. Winter Soldier is the same thing, too. Like, Winter Soldier was an arc in the comics that happened. But outside of the fact that Winter Soldier was in the movie...
Right,
like it's just kind of they just kind of take names from the books and kind of just do their
loose
own thing.
Plots, and they're like, yep, we'll use that.
Loose plots, loose titles, and just kind of like, yeah, let's do our own thing now, which is probably the way to do it.
Which is awesome, yeah.
Like, it's been working so far. So, but in any case, I think that new Avengers lineup is really cool. I think it's also super diverse, which is
Wouldn't Vision be the most overpowered Avenger of all time because he literally has an Infinity Stone in his forehead?
I mean, don't you want an overpowered Avenger?
Yeah, like, it would be awesome. It's great. Like, I want that forever.
Yeah. We should talk about the Vision.
Yes.
He's amazing.
He's great.
I think the creation of him was really interesting. I liked the dichotomy between Vision and Ultron. Kind of two sides of the same coin, so to speak. The Vision is essentially what Stark was trying to create the first time around.
Yeah.
But he messed up and created Ultron.
Although Vision seems like he has a bit of a... like an anarchy side. Like, I feel like he could turn on them at any moment because he said he's on the side of life. And right now, Ultron is against that.
That's true.
Woohoo! It's going to be amazing when he fight him.
I love that, like, within minutes of Vision showing up and, like, having his dramatic, like, thing where he's, like, alive.
Yeah.
He just turns into another quippy Joss Whedon character.
That's so true.
That's, like, one of his, like, he has that dramatic scene where he's like, ah, I'm the Vision and I can do things and whatever.
And, he stops him flying through the air.
And then it shows them, like, making a plan, and Stark's like, oh, I guess I'll have to go after Ultron. And Vision like walks past him and is like, yeah, he hates you the most.
Oh, he'll be looking for me, yeah. Just out of focus in the background as he walks by. That's amazing. I forgot about that. But we have to talk about the moment with Vision.
The moment? What are you talking about? The Thor moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is actually like... the audience that we were in literally gasped in unison.
Yelled,
at this moment, which was crazy. I love, we got to see this at, we saw this at 11 o'clock last night.
Right.
So, because there was no midnight show.
Yeah, but there were like 12 before.
There were like 12 shows before them. We went to the 11 o'clock show. It was a huge crowd.
Yeah.
And it was all like, I love being in that kind of huge crowd environment where everybody's enthusiastic about the movie they're about to see. Mm-hmm. And you get that a lot with these kind of like comic book movies where everybody's
even people
just...
were cheering for trailers and stuff. It
yeah, people
really
like
funny.
Applauded the end of Batman vs Superman trailer.
Yeah, which was fun.
Yeah, but anyway, this moment—the moment where the crowd literally gasps in unison as Vision picks up Thor's hammer.
Yes, oh, it was awesome.
Which was great. Except. Like, I didn't even realize how they were building up to that.
No.
That's the thing, because...
because in the party scene...
In the party scene, there's a scene where everybody just tries to lift Thor's hammer, like, as a goof.
Yeah.
Like, they're just all having fun trying to lift it.
And it wiggles when Captain America touches it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Great touch. So it's, like, this whole thing where everybody's like, oh, I can't do it, whatever. Yeah. And then Vision just picks it up, like, out of nowhere.
He's like, let's go. Whoosh, hands on the hammer. And it's like, ah!
Yeah, the entire audience just gasps. And it was great.
It was so fun.
Oh, man.
And, that's... and then at the end, they're trying to justify it.
Yeah.
There's but an elevator is still going to go up. Doesn't mean the elevator's worthy.
That's a great line.
That was
awesome. There's a lot of really great running jokes in this movie, too. Specifically about the hammer thing, where everybody's just like, oh, yeah, I can't. Like,
yeah, I'm worthy.
Yeah, I can do it, whatever. But also, there's a recurring joke where everybody just makes fun of Captain America for saying language. Like, Stark's, like, doing a thing. He's like, ah, shit, they're doing this. And Captain America shouts at him, language.
Yeah.
And then everybody just makes fun of him for the entire
movie. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's stuff like that that it's just...
that we're going to miss with Joss Whedon.
Yeah, it's just Whedon knows how to do that, man. I don't know. He's the best. But, and then let's talk about Hawkeye's secret family.
Yeah, that happens, apparently.
Which I really liked, because that's, again, like, Hawkeye's a character that you don't know anything about until this movie.
Yep, that's true.
And so, like, early on in the movie, he's, like, talking on the cell phone, and Captain America's like, who's that? I'm like, girlfriend.
Yeah, because he says, I only answer to you, or something like that. And you're like, Hawkeye, the double agent? What? Turns out it was his wife.
Yeah. Hawkeye has a secret family. His wife is played by Linda Cardellini, Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So there's a point where there's like, all right, we're going, like, he calls it a safe house. Like, basically, the Avengers get their ass kicked.
Yeah.
And they kind of go there to recuperate. And, you get so much more of Hawkeye's character because of that scene, because of that whole segment. And they spend a long time there.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like a sort of lull in the action.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it never feels like dull. It feels like to me, the action at the end is better because you have that kind of, like, emotional investment in those characters based on those scenes in the safe house.
That was one complaint or whatever, a critique, I guess, I read, where it's basically, it's... a series of battles with comedy skits in between. It was like, I mean, that's not that I don't want that.
I mean, I wouldn't even call them comedy skits. Like,
And I would disagree with that now, having seen it.
Yeah, like, the safe house scenes are generally really dramatic. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's some funny bits.
As there always are.
Yeah.
But
But yeah, like it's, but it's just fun to see these characters interact together. So right. I think it's like it's fun. Like Joss Whedon can't resist having like a couple of like jokes in there, which is good. That's the thing. You know, I was saying before how DC is going for like the grimdark thing,
right?
But I think Age of Ultron shows how fun these movies can be,
and
while still being kind of serious, like when they need to be. Like there's a scene in this movie where Black Widow talks about how like the people that trained her like. Sterilized her as a child.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
That was really dark shit.
Dark.
That's really dark. As a graduation ceremony.
Yeah.
They sterilize you, apparently.
Yeah. Like, that's intense. That's really dark.
Yeah, and then she pushes the Hulk off a building. Yeah, that was awesome. And there was, like, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but there's, like, a weird, fascination. Oh, not fascination. That's not the right word. But, like... Them having to save every civilian now, following Battle of New York, just obliterated the city.
Well, the thing is, in the Battle of New York, they do save civilians. Like
they do.
Like I was watching it like the other day, and there are multiple scenes where like Hawkeye's like helping people out of a bus and getting them somewhere else, and like Captain America like takes charge and is like, "All right, we got to set a perimeter over here, like talking with the cops and stuff."
And he saves Ashley Johnson, the waitress.
Yes,
which they reuse that again in this one with the. Pretty blonde lady who like gets caught in the rubble.
No, but yeah, no, yeah. But the thing is, Man of Steel doesn't have any of that.
Right.
Superman is just destroying everything.
Yeah,
and this movie specifically felt like a response to Man of Steel because this movie has like a fascination in its climax with the Avengers saving everyone.
That's the whole goal.
Yeah,
is to save the people,
which is. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
They're superheroes.
Yeah, that's true.
Save the innocent humans.
Yeah, good point. Not just defeat evil.
Yeah, like, you have to, like, save them.
Yep.
And it's not like, the thing is, in Man of Steel, like, Superman probably killed way more people than he probably saved.
Than Zod would have.
Yeah. Like, that was a huge criticism against that movie, is that Superman could have easily taken that fight somewhere else.
Right.
Like, he could have taken it to, like, the desert where nobody was around.
Anywhere.
Whatever. Or there could have been some kind of like attempt Superman could make to evacuate humans from Metropolis.
Right.
Like he's Superman. He can do things.
Yeah. But instead he just blows it up.
Exactly. So, I mean, this really felt like, you know, the Avengers are being heroes.
Yeah, exactly.
which is awesome.
True.
And yeah, so, I should mention War Machine shows up during the final battle,
was awesome.
Which was great. He was helping out S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Who is back.
Yeah, didn't they destroy the helicarriers at the end of...
I think Nick Fury said something like, I called in some favors.
Oh, took this one out of mothballs. Yeah,
yeah, that's
right.
What he said, something like... but yeah, so Nick Fury has a very minimal role in this movie, but...
but when it's important.
When he shows up, man, it's pretty great.
It's pretty badass.
Yeah.
We got Colby Smulders back again.
Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah, and like I said, there's so many like characters that can kind of just pop in and out as they please now.
Was Gwyneth Paltrow in the first Avengers?
Yeah, she was.
She was.
Okay. She was not in this one.
No, yeah. I don't remember if she's in them or not.
They mentioned Pepper a couple times.
Yeah, a bunch, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great thing at the party where, like, Tony Stark and Thor are just talking to Pepper and Jane, how awesome they are.
Yeah.
And Murray Hill just, like, coughs, testosterone!
and
leaves.
Oh, man, and the scene with War Machine's telling the story. About the like his dropping
like,
the tank or something.
Tell like a great story, and Tony Stark and Thor like whatever.
Yeah, is that the end of the story?
Is that it? And he's like, you know, that story usually kills. And then it, like 5 minutes later, it's just him telling that same story to another group of people, and they're all like dying.
Yeah. Oh man, it's awesome.
Yeah, we should talk about Quicksilver. We've talked about Scarlet Witch a little bit,
mm-hmm.
And I think Scarlet Witch is a great addition to the team. Quicksilver,
my bestie.
Yes, you met Elizabeth Olsen once.
I have hung out with gotten drunk with Elizabeth Olsen one time.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Now she's an Avenger. That's wild.
Yeah.
It's before she was a person.
Yes.
So that happened.
He's going to leave it at that?
I'm kind of famous. Well, I went to Los Angeles with my friend once when we graduated high school. And his aunt, I don't know, some connection. They knew somebody that like was childhood friends with Elizabeth Olsen. So we're hanging out at the house. She was there. We were talking. Got drunk. And then... That was kind of it. We just hung out at their house.
I mean, that's wild.
Yeah.
You met Elizabeth Olsen.
I met Elizabeth Olsen, yeah.
So
and it was that 2009? So like
before she was like person, yeah. in big things
in movies, yeah.
Oh, she was in like American National movie
probably
before then.
Yeah,
but
that was the only bit of information I got before meeting her was do not mention, do not say how much she looks like them. It's like okay, I won't.
So yeah, Elizabeth Olsen, if you're listening, Mike's here.
Long time no see.
Mike's here.
Let's hang out with your buckets of Avengers movie money.
But I think she's a great addition to the team.
Yeah, and she's really awesome. That character is great.
Yeah. Quicksilver, I think, is a lot of fun to watch. You don't really get that much of him in the movie. Like, he kind of just is doing his thing, like zooming around.
Running really fast.
So basically, Quicksilver's doing his thing, and then he dies.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, he sacrifices himself to save Hawkeye and the kid.
Right.
And that actually, I think that really works. Like, hit me.
Yeah.
That hit me. And I didn't expect that kind of thing to hit me because Quicksilver was, again, a character we barely knew.
Right.
But I think, at least, because I was at that point pretty invested in Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
And so I think his death kind of affected me because it affected Scarlet Witch, is what it was. Like, not so much that I was that invested in his character, but like, I was invested in her.
What his death did to the team.
Exactly.
Made more impact.
And yeah, so I was actually taken aback because I was surprised that they killed off Quicksilver.
I didn't think that was going
to
happen.
That's the thing. It's like we've gotten used to Marvel movies killing characters and then bringing them back to life almost immediately.
Okay.
Well, that's the thing. And every Phase 2 movie, in Iron Man 3,
yeah,
it looks like Pepper dies and then she comes back to life. Right. It also looks like Happy Hogan dies and he's in a hospital bed.
Right.
In Thor 2, it looks like Loki dies.
Right,
and then he comes back to life.
He's Loki.
Yeah, he's Loki, so it's not.
yeah,
that's the one. That's one where I'm like, all right, it's
makes
Loki,
sense.
It's whatever.
Yeah,
Winter Soldier. It looks like Nick Fury dies.
Right,
and then he comes back to life.
Comes back,
and also it looked like Bucky died in the first movie, but right, now he's back. Guardians of the Galaxy. It looks like Groot dies.
Right,
and then he comes back to life. So
they're following comic books perfectly.
Exactly.
No such thing as permadeath.
But it seems like
I think Quicksilver's dead.
The thing that bugs me about
they put his body on the plane and took it with them, and they have their fucking regeneration bed thing. Calling it.
Well, that's the thing. It's I think the fact that they've been doing that has been by the time it got to like Guardians, it felt kind of a cheat to me. And I was happy Groot was still alive. Groot's awesome, yeah. But it was really actually I think it was the Winter Soldier one with Nick Fury where I was like, all right, let's slow down, guys. We just saw him die.
Yeah, wasn't it like a couple scenes later he comes back?
But it was it was. Like, he dies in, like, the first act of the movie and then, like,
oh, really?
Shows up in the third act of the movie.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing that bugs me about that, I don't mind a character coming back to life in these movies because I have been reading comics for a really long time
and I get it. Yeah.
But in order for a story on its own to have stakes, I think the character has to stay dead at least until the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Like, you can bring them back in another movie and I'll be like, all right.
Makes sense.
Whatever. So, like, for example, Coulson's death in The Avengers.
Right.
He does not come back in that movie, and I think his death works in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he came back to life for the TV show Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Which is, like, fine. You know, it's whatever.
I guess. Yeah. That's true.
So, it's fine. It works. Actually, Whedon was actually talking about, like, he's been doing interviews lately, and he was talking about how he did not want them to bring Coulson back to life.
Really?
Yeah. He's actually, Whedon's had some great interviews lately where he's just been shitting all over Marvel.
What? That's crazy.
Yeah. Not just shitting all over them, but, like, he's been, like, expressing kind of his frustrations.
Right.
So now he's on his way out, so
what's the difference, yeah.
But he was talking about how he feels that Coulson coming back to life on the TV show kind of dilutes his death scene a little bit in The Avengers. Which I get.
That's true.
Yeah. It's actually, because I was watching Avengers a couple days ago, like I said, and it's weird to me how much that movie feels like a TV show at certain points. And this one feels more like a cinematic, like
this
movie experience.
Movie, yeah.
And I think part of the reason for that, because I sort of remember feeling that way when that movie came out, but I feel like it more now, just because Coulson is on a TV show now.
Because he's literally a TV character now.
Yeah, now he's on a TV show.
That's true. Makes sense.
That's definitely something that the Marvel movies have had an issue with, is bringing characters back to life. But Quicksilver is dead at the end of this movie, and he did not come back.
True, not in this movie at least.
Literally, the way he died, like I think it's gonna be really hard to bring him back if they want to.
Yeah,
you see his body riddled with bullet holes.
Yeah.
But his sacrifice, I think, works really well within the context of the movie, especially because of how invested I was at Scarlet Witch at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think, it's crazy because Like, that's the thing. You bring in a new character to an Avengers movie, and I expect to see that movie in, like, six more movies. Like, yeah. I expect to see that character in, like, six more movies. Yep. And I think Whedon knows that, and kind of, like... That's the thing. Whedon loves killing characters.
He does. You're right.
He was actually against killing Coulson in the first movie. Marvel, like, asked him to do it.
Made him do it.
Yeah. And he was like, they're going to blame me for this.
That's funny.
But I think with Quicksilver, he played on the expectation of everybody thinking, he'll probably be in a bunch of movies. Now this is his first one.
Yeah.
So I think he saw that opportunity and took it. Because that was a good way for him to kill a character, raise the stakes, but
and not motivate Scarlet Witch to fully join
the Avengers. And also not kill any of the main Avengers.
That's a good point. Good point. That's true.
But yeah. What did you think of Quicksilver in this movie versus Quicksilver in X-Men Days of Future Past?
The accent was different.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting them to just be
like thick,
straight thick Russian accents.
Yeah.
Although Elizabeth Olsen fades in and out.
A little bit,
A little bit.
I think hers is better than Aaron Taylor Johnson's.
Yeah, his is way more just stereotypical. But he's got way more quips. He sets up some of the Hawkeye's funny bits.
Yeah, he does. Maybe you don't remember Days of Future Past that much, but Quicksilver in that movie was like quipping all over the place. Like,
yeah, he was like quick-witted.
Like Days of Future Past, Quicksilver was like a manic ball of energy. Like he was just
true. Yeah, all I remember really about that scene, that movie with him, is that scene in the kitchen or whatever,
the time in the bottle,
like running
scene
around punching everybody,
yeah,
or setting them up to punch themselves.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best scene in that movie.
Let's be real.
Yeah, but I mean, I like both versions of these.
I liked him. He was fine. I liked. Him and Hawkeye's interactions were really funny.
Yeah, that's good.
Hawkeye draws the bow, and he's like, nobody would know. That was great. That was awesome.
Yes. Okay, Hawkeye is amazing in this movie.
Yeah.
Hawkeye actually has the best line in this movie.
Yeah, you think that's the best line?
Which I'm about to say the best line.
Okay.
It's when he's like trying to motivate Scarlet Witch in that final battle.
Yep.
And he's like, all right. The city's flying. Like, the city's flying. He's so like, exasperated.
Yeah.
He's like, the city's flying, there's an army of robots, and I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
Yeah, that's definitely, I think that's the best line in the movie.
Like, it was awesome. There's so much good stuff.
Yeah. I'm out of ways to praise this movie.
Yeah, we've been basically just making this an Avengers wank fest this entire time. But you know what? It's an awesome, fun time.
Yeah.
I think
I want more. I probably would see it many more times.
Yeah. No, I think I'm very disappointed that Whedon's leaving.
Yeah.
Although I'm very excited to see what he does next.
Yeah. Because now that he has billions of dollars.
That's the thing. Now he's just directed two of the biggest movies of all time.
Yeah.
Or at least one biggest movie of all time, and one that will probably be one of the most biggest, one of the biggest movies of all time. And so he basically has clout to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, he can answer to nobody.
Yeah.
He can make so many Shakespearean movies in his backyard.
Yeah, he can do that. He can do...
he can bring back Firefly.
He can bring back Firefly single-handedly.
Yeah. Just by sheer will.
Yeah, he could really do whatever he wants. I'd love to see a new project from him. I'd love to see a new TV show from him.
Yeah, that's his
thing. Medium. He does produce Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but he has very little involvement with that show.
Right.
So I'm very excited to see what he does next.
Mm-hmm.
And I am worried for the state of the MCU now that he's not going to be there.
Well, these are the only two movies that he did, right? Was two Avengers?
He did Avengers and Avengers 2, but he also signed a contract with Marvel for 3 years after Avengers came out,
mm-hmm,
to basically kind of be a creative consultant on all of their movies.
So he's had a hand in stuff.
Yeah, basically, Iron Man 3 was already kind of done by the time, like, before he was able to do that. But Thor 2, Captain America 2, and Guardians of the Galaxy have all had, like, sort of a Joss Whedon hand in them. Just, like, kind of a consultant. Not, like, so, from what I understand, Thor 2 is the one where he needed to really do work.
Do the most.
I remember when that movie came out, they, like, described how, like, they airlifted it in Joss Whedon. Like, he came down in, like, a helicopter and just came down and, like, rewrote a couple scenes and left.
And left. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think his suggestions of that movie was actually add more Loki, which is the best suggestion you could possibly make.
Yeah, correct. Now that you got me thinking about that, his vision being a setup, Thor's vision being a setup for Thor Ragnarok, would you happen to know if Ragnarok is the hell version of whatever Norse... mythology? Because I think Valhalla is like heaven.
Right. Ragnarok is like, in Norse mythology, Ragnarok is like the destruction of everything.
Oh, okay.
So basically,
because in that vision, what's his name? I can't. Idris Elba. I don't remember his name.
However,
Heimdall.
Right. So Ragnarok is basically the apocalypse of Asgard. But that could be what Ragnarok is. However, there's also, in the Civil War storyline in the comics, there's Tony Stark creates a robot named Ragnarok, which is like a robot Thor.
Oh, wow. Deep.
So it could be that.
Could be that, too.
I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows these crazy things?
Because in his vision, Heimdall tells him that he sent them all to hell, and like they're all in hell.
Right.
It's like, ooh, maybe that's Ragnarok.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll find out, I guess. Who knows?
Yeah, so, I mean, Avengers Age of Ultron, awesome.
Great.
Like, just, I think, like...
The best.
Again, yeah, I think it's the best one. I think Whedon brings his A-game. And it, like, the making of this movie, it seemed like such a struggle for him to, like...
On board.
It seemed like he barely came out of it alive. Like, it was such an exhausting process making this movie. And I'm sure he was, like, fighting with Marvel every step of the way. Like, it seems like it.
Yeah. Isn't something supposed to film for, like, 9 months? Is it, like, Civil War, I think?
I don't really know. Civil War just started filming. I don't think it'd be 9 months. Because Civil War is coming out in a year.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think it would be 9 months.
Maybe not that one.
I think Infinity War is shooting back-to-back, so that might be what
you're thinking. That might be what it was, yeah. That was probably it. Yeah. I think I saw a thing from Chris Evans, like a little thing. Was
okay.
Like,
yeah,
one of them is going to take 9 months to film.
Yeah, I'm eager to see what they do with Infinity War. Like, if the first one's going to be, like, this new Avengers lineup, you know, with, Falcon.
Oh, okay.
And then part two could be, like, bringing the gang back together, get Iron Man and Hulk.
Get everybody.
Yeah. Get every hero in the Marvel
Universe.
Well,
if there's going to be movies between the two of them, those guys have to be in part two.
Could be. I mean, the movies between the two of them are going to be Black Panther and Captain Marvel.
Right.
Yeah. And also Spider-Man will be in Infinity War. Because he has to be.
Yes. Correct.
He's
getting his own movie, so.
Yeah, we are now contractually obligated to have Spider-Man in everything.
Yes. Our dreams have come true, Mike.
I know.
We made that happen.
Yeah. So, I'm excited about the future. You know, I'm a little worried. No Joss Whedon to keep it in control. Mm-hmm. It seems like... obviously, Kevin Feige is like the main guy in charge of everything.
Yeah, he's the dude.
But it seems like, as far as a creative voice goes, like a direct, it seems like the Russos are going to be it from this point forward,
right?
Because they're directing Civil War, and then they're doing Infinity War. Mm-hmm. So I think like they're good. You know, the Russos directed Winter Soldier.
I trust him.
Yeah, they directed many of my favorite episodes of Community and Arrested Development. And they're also those movies are going to be written by Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely, who have been on board with Marvel since Captain America 1.
Wow.
They wrote that one. They wrote Captain America 2. I think they did like a rewrite on Thor 2. And they're doing Civil War, and they're going to be writing Infinity War, I think. And they also produced Agent Carter. So
you know, they got a track record.
They've been with Marvel forever. And they're good. They do their thing. But, you know, I fear we're going to lose that Whedon touch. That Whedon touch, man.
I don't know.
Like, we need... I like the Russos, and I like them, but I feel like we need somebody who's as strong as Whedon. To keep doing these movies. I think right now we have probably James Gunn doing Guardians 2.
Yeah, so that's true.
At least there's something that to look forward to. Because, I don't know, like, the thing is, like, part of what interests me about the DC movies is they're hiring really great filmmakers to do these things.
To do each one.
Yeah. Like, I am a fan of Zack Snyder, despite not liking Man of Steel. And, you know, David Ayer is not a guy I'm a huge fan of, but he makes interesting movies that are totally his.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing Suicide Squad. James Wan might be directing Aquaman.
Right.
You know, and
toss up.
Phil Lord and Chris Miller may be doing The Flash.
Lego Flash.
Lego Flash.
Everything they do needs to be Lego.
Yes. Lego Jump Street Flash.
Oh my God, I'm in.
Lego Flash starring Channing Tatum as The Flash and Jonah Hill as another Flash.
As whatever the sidekick of The Flash is.
Barry Allen and Wally West, the two different Flashes.
Whoa.
So
deep.
Yeah. The Marvel movies have hired really great filmmakers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They had Edgar Wright, but he lost him.
They let him go.
But I mean, they've had Joss Whedon. They had Kenneth Branagh direct the first Thor.
Yeah, remember that? That was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And Shane Black did Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
James Gunn to Guardians of the Galaxy. So they have, like, unified voices. I find the best Marvel movies are the ones that are written and directed by the same person who have, like, a singular voice.
Yeah.
I think they're actually, like, they hire good directors, but the people that they hire to direct slash write are generally stronger writers than they are directors.
That's true.
So I'm thinking, like, Joss Whedon has a distinctive writing voice. Mm-hmm. Shane Black has a distinctive writing voice, which, mm-hmm. which was perfect for Iron Man.
Yeah.
And James Gunn, you know, was Guardians of the Galaxy. So as far as I know, outside of Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I don't think there's any, like, writer-directors coming up for the Marvel movies. Although Drew Goddard might be doing Spider-Man.
Really?
Yeah. So,
that'd be cool.
Yeah. So, and he would probably write it, too, if that's the case. And he's from the Joss Whedon school of writing and directing. Right. So.
Possibly Asa Butterfield, too.
Asa Butterfield might be the actor who plays Spider-Man. He's, like, the top choice.
I would
be okay
with that.
Yeah, I haven't seen him since he was, like, 12 and in Hugo.
he's okay in Ender's Game. Like,
okay, I didn't see Ender's Game. But yeah, I'm sure.
But he's
an
avid Redditor, so I like him. Like, seriously.
Yeah,
awesome.
I'm sure he's good. Like, I feel like that's the choice. There's a couple of people who I would have been really excited for. Like, I wanted, like, Tyler James Williams, who played Everybody Hates Chris. Chris. But Asa Butterfield is the one that makes me go, like, yeah, all right.
Okay. Yeah, whatever.
I can work with that. He doesn't seem as distinctive as Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield. But
no, he's just kind of like generic skinny white guy.
Yeah, but in a way, he can probably make the role his own in that way. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see.
We'll save that discussion for another episode when it's confirmed, whoever it is.
So, but in any case, you want to talk about the post-credit scene? There's not really much to talk about.
No, but Thanos is in it.
yeah, basically, the post-credits scene, Thanos shows up, grabs the Infinity Gauntlet, and was like, oh, I gotta do this myself.
Yeah, it's like, so it's pretty lame, actually, that thing about it.
Which I enjoyed. Like, I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like the shawarma scene at the end of The Avengers.
Oh, man. That was great.
The shawarma scene was the best. That's a great Joss Whedon moment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Thanos shows up, played by Josh Brolin.
Yep. Puts on the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yep, and says, like, oh, gotta do this myself, and then he cuts.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. It's not, like, one of the really overly elaborate post-credits scenes of, like...
No.
Like, Thor 2 had, like, that Guardians of the Galaxy tease, and, like, Captain America 2 had that tease for this movie, The Avengers.
Yeah.
With, like, Baron von Strucker and Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. This doesn't really have that, just has Thanos show up and is like, oh, I gotta do this.
Yeah.
So
I thought, I don't remember when it was, but there's the scene where he takes the Infinity Stone out of Loki's
scepter
and puts it in the thing, and then, like, we see all of the Infinity Stones. I don't remember what.
Right. Yeah, it's like you see the Tesseract and you see the Aether.
Yeah, you see the
Orb from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and this one.
Yeah.
I was like, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, hey, remember all these other things, people?
Yeah, so now we have 4 Infinity Stones, right? Well, there's 6, I think, total.
Oh, there are 6.
Thor actually mentions, like, it's 1 of 6.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So
we got 4 of them.
Yeah, so now we have 4. We have the Mind Gem, which is in Vision's head right now,
mm-hmm.
The Orb from Guardians, the Aether, and the Tesseract.
Yep.
So, we have 2 more. Where do you think we'll see those?
I don't know. Not Civil War.
Yeah, I feel like Doctor Strange would probably be a good place for one.
Doctor Strange will probably be one of them, you're right.
And probably if Thor 3 or Guardians 2, I think would be a place.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we can probably wrap it up.
Probably. I don't know. Let's do another hour. Why not? We got time.
Yeah, we probably could.
We probably could, yeah.
But, you know, that's. I think it's about it. Yeah. So, final thoughts on Age of Ultron?
Everyone should see it now, forever.
Yes, I think it's one of the better best
documentary.
One of the best documentaries of our time.
The Maisel brothers are going out on a limb with this one.
yeah, I love Age of Ultron. I thought it's a great blockbuster movie. Joss Whedon is the king. I'm excited for whatever he does next.
Yep, yep.
I'm excited for the future of the Marvel Universe, although I'm a little...
tentatively excited.
There's a little trepidation just because Joss Whedon won't be there to oversee it anymore.
Yep.
But in any case, that about wraps up our review of Avengers Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mike, where can we find more of your work on the internet this week?
Twitter.com/MDFilmBlog.
All right. You can follow me on twitter.com/emmasmithfilmblog.
Oh, so original.
And you can find my other work, podcast work, at filmbook.com. We're also, Filmbookcast is available on iTunes now.
Oh, that's right.
Throwing that out there. You can also find my other podcasts about like The Walking Dead and Agent Carter and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So if you want some Marvel fixes, I got you. And a bunch of other stuff. I also recently published a couple of reviews on Filmbook for some movies I watched for the Tribeca Film Festival. So you can check those out, too, if you want to.
Good job, Mike.
If you want to. Come on, guys.
Please.
Please do it. I love you so much. All right, guys. That about wraps it up. So we will see you guys next time. What have I done? What have you done with his border?
What?
It's from Brazil.
Oh, true.
Seen Brazil, right?
I have, but I don't think I remember it very much.
It's a recurring thing in like the dream that he has, or it's like one character shouts, "What have you done with his body?"